My name is Brad Wolf, and I'm with the U.S. Organizing Committee for the International People's Tribunal for the 1945 atomic bombings, and specifically to redress the Korean victims of those atomic bombings.
And can you give us some history of how it is that Koreans were affected by the atomic bomb?
Yes, in 1910, Japan colonized Korea and began using Koreans in various forms, oftentimes bringing them to the Japanese mainland to work in the mines and in munitions factories. Of course, there's the very horrific story of Korean women being used as comfort women by the Japanese. Specifically, this tribunal is taking a look at those Koreans who were brought to the Japanese mainland and were in Hiroshima and Nagasaki on August 6th and August 9th of 1945. And they were working in those cities when the atomic bombs were dropped by the United States. And they became unintended victims of these atomic bombings. The United States was not at war with Korea at the time. They were forced to be there. And there were over 70,000, between 70 to 100,000 Koreans who became victims of these atomic blasts in August of 1945. And ever since, they've been marginalized by history, by governments. Their wounds, their deaths, their sufferings have gone unaccounted for. The United States refuses to acknowledge what has happened. And this tribunal is a people's tribunal that's trying to not only shine a light on the Korean victims, but hold the United States accountable for what happened 80 years ago. And we are coming up on the 80th anniversary of this. This summer is 80 years since those atomic bombs were dropped on those two civilian sites.
The tribunal, when will that take place?
The tribunal itself will have its opening gavel next spring, 2026, in New York City. And it's to coincide with the Non-Proliferation Treaty at the United Nations. And the verdict from that tribunal will be delivered to the NPT, the Non-Proliferation Treaty Conference, as well as to the United States government.
Can we expect the verdict to affect the policy and the behavior of the U.S. government?
That is certainly one of the goals. So one of the goals is to have the United States acknowledge and apologize to the Koreans who were subjected to this horrific attack. Another goal is to establish a legal basis demonstrating that the use of atomic weapons in 1945 violated international law as it then stood. And there is a team of lawyers working on that right now, and they'll be spending the next year continuing to research and write the briefs on that to submit to the tribunal. And if a legal basis can be established indicating that the use of those weapons were violative of international law in 1945, then that could be used today to help outlaw nuclear weapons today. It could lead to the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula and perhaps the denuclearization of the world. So in one sense, this tribunal was about the Korean victims, but in an even larger sense, it's about ridding the world of nuclear weapons and doing so by establishing a legal basis that other courts, international and domestic, may be able to take up and move forward with.
Is fact that Bill Clinton apologized to the victims who were exposed to radiation following the testing of the atomic bombs and then hydrogen bombs in the Nevada area, upwind Nevada and several other states, and actually victims of radiation poisoning. It is a fact he didn't apologize to everybody because the entire country ultimately was exposed to radioactive fallout as well as many other countries since the radiation circled the globe before being rained out.
It did. There's an excellent film on that called Silent Fallout that documents the downwinders and how that radiation fallout spread all the way from Nevada to where I live in Pennsylvania. And they have maps showing the trail of radiation moving across the country in the late 50s and 1960s and hitting New York, Pennsylvania, Washington. We were all exposed to that fallout.
That's right. It affected industry at the time, a Kodak film manufacturer complained to the Atomic Energy Commission that an entire run of its product had been ruined by exposure to radioactive fallout that had been incorporated into its packaging material. Kept on the quiet, like much of the destructive blowback or boomerang effect of what is essentially an expression of sort of fascist approach to expressing the nationalism and the supremacy of one group of people over another.
It is. It's a form of colonialism, of nationalism. You know, you have colonialism in the form of the Japanese colonizing Korea, but then you have a new form of colonialism with the United States and its use of atomic weapons and its continued threat to use atomic weapons on other states unless they do what the United States wants. And right now, Korea finds itself in the crosshairs of a potential nuclear conflict.
It's evident that countries that have given up nuclear weapons or their programs to achieve them have subsequently been put on or the enemies list and overthrown U.S. government or through proxy wars, as took place in Libya. How long is it the tribunal expected to last, and is it open to the public?
The tribunal itself, when it opens next spring, will last over a weekend, probably 3 days, and it is indeed open to the public. So we're going to spend the next year trying to raise public awareness in the United States about what happened to the Koreans and what this tribunal is attempting to accomplish. So if anybody would like to learn more about it or become a part of this, become involved, if you go to the website abomtribunal.org, that's abomtribunal.org. All the information is there. You can email us about getting involved and help us to spread the word so that come next year, next spring, there's a good turnout, but even more importantly, so that the American public is aware of what happens when atomic weapons, when nuclear weapons are used. They're not surgical. They're not precise. They're not going to hit an intended target. There's a lot of casual talk these days about tactical nuclear warheads being used in Ukraine or with China or what have you. You cannot control them. They go on killing for generations. Some of the Koreans who came to New York City this past week for the talks at the United Nations on the Treaty for the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons, they were second and third generation bomb victims. These cancers carry on from one generation to the next, and the bomb goes on killing decade after decade. So it's important that the American public in particular be made aware of what has happened in the past so they can chart a better future.
I couldn't agree more. Part of that awareness is the fact that they were bombed indirectly as well, and our second, third, and fourth generation victims, because the nuclear effect, the ionizing radiation effect, well known to science, well known to the people planning to use the atomic bombs, was established by Madame Curie in her experiments on genetic damage caused to fruit flies during her experiments. It's often a pretense that there's no evidence about what the effect is on mammals and humans and the complexity of the development of the fetus. Can you say something about the two Koreans who came to speak from their personal experience, an elderly gentleman and a woman who spoke about what happened to them and their efforts for both justice and, as you mentioned, a larger sense of commitment to the future of life on this planet, a civilized and life itself, since we face existential threats?
Yes, the Korean delegation that arrived in New York City last week and which is currently in Chicago right now meeting with different groups of students and different organizations consists of a number of atomic bomb victims, first and second generation survivors. two of which, two of these people, these very courageous, persevering, dignified individuals, spoke at length about what they had gone through. Mr. Shim Jin Dae, it was a Korean who was born in 1943 in Hiroshima. And he was born in Hiroshima because his parents had to go to Hiroshima to work in the munitions factories there. And 2 years later, the atomic bomb was dropped. And though he and his family survived the initial blast, they were sent back to Korea after the war and, of course, found themselves in the midst of the Korean Civil War, which was a proxy war between the U.S. and the Soviet Union at the time. And looming over that civil war was the threat to use atomic weapons again. And Mr. Shim tells this heart-wrenching story of what his life was like after the bomb. His father was killed in the Korean War, and at 7 years old, Mr. Shim becomes the caretaker of the family, of his mother and his siblings. And so he is forced to scrape the skins off of old fruit and vegetables and try to make a porridge out of it to feed them, and to travel into the woods to gather as many sticks as he can and strap them on his back and carry them to market to trade for a few vegetables. And this is how he and his family lived for decades. And he said it wasn't until he was in his 50s that he eventually came to the realization that this suffering, this life of suffering, was not his fault. He had always thought that it somehow was, but then he realized that it was not, that this was war, this was violence, and this was the A-bomb that was doing this again and again. So it's a tough story to hear, but it's an important one to hear. And another person who spoke was Ms. Han Jung-soon, who was a second generation atomic bomb victim. She was born in 1959. Her young parents were in Hiroshima at the time. They carried with them the cancer, such that Ms. Han, throughout her life, suffered from these debilitating bone diseases. And by the time she was a young adult, she could not walk. She had to move around on her hands and knees. And she said there were bloody palm prints on the floor of their small house from her dragging herself around. And then her son was born with cerebral palsy. So now we're into a third generation of atomic bomb victims. And so it's these kinds of stories of generational suffering that need to be addressed, they need to be acknowledged, and the American public needs to be made aware of.
What's the reception that this campaign to educate people about atomic radioactive weapons, whether they're hydrogen bombs or so-called depleted uranium, which is still radioactive, only depleted of the fissionable component, but still radioactive, and when ingested after it in intense heat, when it impacts, becomes a ceramic that is very difficult for the body to dislodge itself of. Perhaps you know the work of Rosalie Bertel?
Yes. Philip Berrigan relied on much of her work in his writings.
We are a society of veterans who discover that they're giving birth to deformed children, as well as experiencing ongoing, long-lasting, after they've left the military, debilitating illnesses, cancers, and related immune suppression. And yet, like many people who suffered illness, there's a stigma to talk about it. Perhaps this program that you're a part of will help the country in its own right have a truth and reconciliation convening, so that people can speak out and not turn their anger toward themselves, but toward the ruling class. This is a part of class war, this effect on ordinary people, a program of colonialism, imperialism, and world domination. And as we heard on Democracy Now, the Democrats are as maybe more so complicit in the violence that is carried out on behalf of the United States, as we say in our name.
And that's a very good point to consider. This Korean People's Tribunal is offering to Americans the opportunity for the truth and reconciliation that you mentioned. because it is through truth and reconciliation that we can find peace, that we can live in peace and work in peace. But without truth and reconciliation, without acknowledging what has been done and acknowledging the victims, we cannot move forward. So this is not just for the benefit of the Koreans, but it's for the benefit of us and the rest of the world. And you would ask about the reception the tribunal is getting, and it's fascinating. Everybody that I talk to about the Korean tribunal says the same thing, which is, I had no idea there were Koreans in Hiroshima and Nagasaki when the bombs went off. And this is this unknown part, this insidious part of history that's been hidden and that speaks to the unintended victims. So Ms. Han, who I'd mentioned, who was born in 1959 and suffered from the bone diseases, she quoted a proverb, which is that an aimless stone can kill a frog. And you know, an aimless stone just thrown carelessly can kill a frog. And a nuclear weapon is the same way. You don't know who it's going to kill, who it's going to make sick, even generations after the fact. So as I talk to people about this, and as these fascinating people, these Korean atomic bomb victims, speak to the public about this, I think everybody is hit with the hard reality of what happened, and they're made cognizant of the fact that we need to work a lot harder to be sure that this never happens again.
And that's an important point at this time, because of the previous administration, the Biden administration, the people who formulated the foreign policy, especially fomented a war in Ukraine for a variety of reasons, a proxy war against Russia, seemed to think that a nuclear war is winnable. And that concept is also a part of the U.S. military strategy, that they plan for a winnable nuclear war. That requires a first strike capacity, which means the Russians are constantly on edge when more modern, more powerful weapons are gifted to the Ukrainians to fire on Moscow and other Russian territory. They don't know whether or not those will be carrying nuclear weapons, and they do know that there is a certain level of insanity within the planning class, the militarist class, the business class, that sees the world only as a lens of exploitation and control. They don't know, actually they do know, that Russia has always been a target for attack, deconstruction, for occupation and exploitation, just like any prospected colony that the U.S. or any imperial power seeks to gain control over. Is that part of the awareness that the contingent and the tribunal will bring?
I think it will. I truly think it will, because Ukraine is such an excellent example of how things could go catastrophically wrong. As you mentioned, the missiles that NATO continued to move closer and closer to the Russian border, eventually coming now within, you know, minutes of Moscow, where they fired, and they don't know if those are nuclear-tipped missiles or not. That kind of gamble is a very, very dangerous one. And I rarely, if ever, quote Ronald Reagan, but Ronald Reagan did say that a nuclear war must never be fought and can never be won. And that's very true. It cannot be won. And this talk that we've reverted back to, that, yeah, we can fight a small, manageable, contained nuclear war on the battlefield, this is insanity. It can't be contained. It'll escalate quickly. You've got human beings behind this who are going to become quickly emotional and irrational, and things will go out of control. So I think efforts like the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons at the United Nations, what ICANN initiated and won the Nobel Prize for doing, those kinds of efforts, that needs to be moved forward front and center. And Americans need to get behind that, because the United States has not signed that treaty. Over 98 countries have, but the United States has not. And they need to. They need to lead the way to peace, not to war.
that's a good point to end on for this moment, but we'll continue to follow this and speak to you in the future. I want to thank Brad Wolf. We'll contact you afterward to set up further interviews.
That would be wonderful. Thank you so much for speaking with me today.
This is WZRD Chicago.